I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name's Jamie Loftus.
And,
ooh.
Wow.
Loftus?
I'm trying a new.
Okay.
I'm trying a new thing. Great. I'm still Caitlin Durante. We have a podcast called The Bechdel Cast, in which we discuss the portrayal and representation of women in cinema through a feminist lens. Because wouldn't you know it, Hollywood usually fucks up real bad when it comes to portraying women well.
I'm struggling taking this Babybel cheese out of its waxy container. Mm. Did you ever know that you can eat the wax?
Oh, can you?
Yeah, if you think it's food, the first time you have Babybel cheese, maybe you're, I don't know, out on a date with someone and they're like, hey, do you want some Babybel cheese? And you're like, yeah. And then you just bite into it thinking there's no task to perform before you can. Anyways.
Well, that's a good example of a conversation that I think passed the Bechdel test.
I didn't specify what gender
the date was.
The date
right.
was.
So
and I won't now.
So I'm pretty that passed the Bechdel test. And if you're mm-hmm. still curious what that is, I shall elaborate. It is a test that you apply to media like movies, for example, that requires that two female characters speak to each other. They have names and their conversation cannot be about a man. So, that is the
should I bring up Pussy Saga again or people gonna be all pussy sagged out from last week.
I think we're extremely pussy sagged out.
Just to all our listeners out there who are on the pussy saga, that is their life. We wish you the best in your pussy saga.
Yes.
I just wanted to say it.
Okay. Anyway.
Caitlin's mad at me. I don't understand why you're mad so soon.
Yeah, it usually takes me like 20 minutes or so.
I know. I'm getting stressed and tearing up my cheese into small pieces.
No, I'm not mad. Okay. I'm happy that you brought up Pussy Saga. But I did want to just stay on track and say that the Bechdel test is what we use as just a basis for a larger conversation.
Yeah.
So I say without much further ado, we should introduce our guest. Who is a wonderful person. He is a musician. He's a very funny person. Chris Farron.
Hi.
Hi, thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. Chris, of course, has been fully restrained.
Yes.
But because he is a trusted friend, bungee cords.
Yeah, thank you.
A comfortable restraint.
Yeah, I can move a little bit.
We have the scary stuff. We have sharper stuff.
Right.
But that's for interrupters.
A friend of mine, sorry.
You just interrupted me, Chris,
so
and you
no,
have
no,
to go.
No, I can leave.
All right, so Chris, you have brought us the movie Frozen.
Yes.
Why did you pick this? Tell us about your history with this movie.
Okay, so 3 years ago, I saw this movie for the first time, and something about it really activated my mind.
Okay.
And I really, really liked it, and I became obsessed with it.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I had, like, merch that had Frozen characters on it. Like, I sold merch that said my name, but it also had Frozen people. Probably illegal.
Oh.
Or definitely illegal.
Well, when you were emailing us, like, with your few different movie picks, and we were sort of deliberating which one to go with, and we were like, what if we just do Frozen? And then we, like, combined your name with it, so it was, like, Chris Farrozen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Farrozen.
Yep. That works.
It works really well. You're welcome, everybody.
I should have done that for the shirt. And then, like, people who would come to my shows would start bringing me Frozen swag.
So you really love this movie.
I did, yeah, for sure.
But
I mean,
not anymore?
I still love it, but I have a tendency to get, like, all in on things and then
and back off a bit.
Like, well, I think it was mostly, and I'm sorry to anybody hearing this. Who maybe brought me stuff.
Do we have a sklusy right now?
No. I just, I get pretty sick of it because of how much my own fault I like attached it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
My apartment was full of Frozen stuff. And I like kind of looked around one day. I was like, I don't like anything this much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of started cooling off.
Sure. Hey, cooling off? Would you say... And, oh,
did I say what?
Frozen? The temperature of Frozen, which is cold. And then, okay.
Keep going. No, don't stop.
I am stopping. Much like flowing water does when it gets frozen, it stops.
Yes.
Okay.
That's cool.
A good job.
But again, I say thank you to anybody who ever brought me any sort of frozen gift.
Yes.
Wow.
Here's the thing. We often get tweets, Facebook messages, different methods of correspondence
right.
from fans. Some of them are men asking us to not have so many men on the podcast.
Oh, no.
I think, and we hear you, we're listening to our fans.
We're listening, but sometimes we're ignoring as well.
Well, sometimes... I think the reason that we still have on male guests, because often they are wonderful and our fans acknowledge that, but I think it's important to, in a situation like yours where you loved the movie Frozen and you brought it to us, like, this movie was intended largely for, like, young girl audiences. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't expect a grown adult man to, like, really have this movie resonate with them. So I think it's interesting and good to... include the representation of a grown man loving.
Wow.
I feel like.
So that's where.
I'm half of all grown men.
I feel like I'm being roasted almost, but it's nice.
No, go ahead. Caitlin, I did like how you slowed you slowed the sentence down when you were like, a full grown man who likes Frozen. And it's good that that exists too. That's how my mom would talk to me when she thought I was, like, doing something fucked up too much, but, like, it wasn't illegal. You know, she's like, well, I think it's interesting that you eat dog food on stage. And I can't tell you no. Uh-huh. Oh, love it.
Anyway, what I'm trying to say, Chris, is we're very happy you're here.
And I'm happy to be here.
Yes. And we like you so much. And we're so glad you brought us the movie Frozen.
This is my first time seeing this movie this morning.
I did not know that.
And I love a princess movie and all the problems that come with it. But mm-hmm. I love a princess movie. I think the reason that I did not see this movie is because when this movie came out, I was a substitute teacher in elementary school, and it would be all they would talk about.
Yeah.
And it was horrible. and it was just total. And my mom is a teacher as well, and so is my cousin. It was just like there was a lot of adult fatigue coming off this movie because it was so popular in a way that, like, few movies are anymore. Like, it's like a movie just everyone has seen it. To the point where when I was a substitute gym teacher, brag, I could literally coerce the children into, I'm just like, go have the time with the ball over there. And then at the end of class, I will play Let It Go if you do what I tell you, the whole class. And they would do it because kids, there's something is activated within them when they hear that song or was a couple of years ago.
Sure.
But I think still is. Like, every child on the planet has seen this movie likes it.
Yeah. When that song started, when I watched it today, when it started, I was thinking, okay, this is overplayed, this song. And then about halfway through it, I was like, I love this song so much.
It's a good song.
I was so excited when she like lets her hair down and then her outfit changes. It's so cool.
It's a very empowering song for her.
Yeah.
And moment in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw the movie for the first time. I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I think I saw it like right after, like when it came out on DVD. And
Caitlin loves DVDs. Love DVDs.
That's cool.
Caitlin has more DVDs than anyone I know.
Most of them were bought between the years of like 2002 and 2010, we'll say.
Wow. Yeah, that,
I've hardly bought any in the past several years. But
I don't even have a DVD damn player.
Whoa.
Wow.
Is that
the counterculture has yeah. arrived.
Yeah.
I don't have a DVD player or a TV.
That's okay. Cool.
Thank you so much. I know.
So anyway, I saw this movie shortly after it came out, and it did not quite resonate with me the same way it did for you. I was like, oh, it's cute. It's okay. But I only saw Frozen that one time before rewatching it yesterday, and I don't think it's a good movie. Like, I think the story is flimsy. I think overall, it is net positive in what messages it sends, especially considering the intended audience. But like, I compared this movie to Moana, and its characters are so much better. Its script is so much tighter. I like the song's a lot better. Like, the animation's a lot better.
Moana does feel like more of a fully realized movie. There's parts of Frozen that feel incomplete, kind of.
Yeah, or just like thrown together. It's like, why is Olaf there? Like, I get why he's there, but like, does it serve the story at all?
I hate that he's, that's a hill I'll die on. I was arguing in the car over here. I think that if Josh Gad is in the movie at all, it cannot pass the Bechdel test. if he is on the roster, it cannot. I don't know why I have such a visceral hatred of Josh Gad, but I do want to steal his lunch money and throw him in a trash can.
Yeah.
Which is just...
Okay, I just want to say that we on the Bechdelcast do not endorse bullying.
Except as it pertains to Josh Gad.
Okay,
there's always an asterisk.
Your words, not mine. Should I do the recap?
Yes.
Okay. So Frozen centers around two sisters, one named Anna and one named Elsa. They are very close as children. Something about Elsa is that she has these like kind of magical ice powers where she can conjure up snow and she can turn anything into ice and also create snowmen who are anthropomorphized and
she can just summon Josh Gad, which is more of a curse than anything else.
And so she has all these powers that are getting stronger with age and that are like exacerbated when she's feeling feelings. And while she's like, they're like playing with her magical powers, Elsa injures Anna and her parents have to take her to these troll magical things.
They're cute.
They're fine. They're made of stones, and I don't get why they're there. So the troll king is like, we have to erase all of your memories of Elsa having powers. So then Elsa kind of goes into seclusion because like she's encouraged by her family to not use her powers, and she becomes like a bit of a shut-in. Mm-hmm. And then their parents die.
Of course.
At least both of them die.
True.
Subverting the normal princess option. They become total orphans.
Yeah.
Right.
They go full orphan.
Mm-hmm. And then a few years later, Elsa comes of age and she is about to have the coronation ceremony where she will become queen. And she's nervous because she's like, what if my powers come through? Because no one knows about them, including Anna, because her memory has been erased. And then all these like visitors come for the coronation, including this guy, Hans, who Anna falls in love with immediately, and they get engaged.
Sight.
Yes. And then Anna goes to Elsa and she's like, do you give us your blessing for us to get married? And Elsa's like, no, that's stupid. And also, ice. everywhere. Yeah. And her powers are unleashed and everyone's like, oh my God, she's a monster. So she runs away and builds an ice castle on a mountain.
Sure.
As you do.
Of course.
And
it's a beautiful castle.
It is cute. Stunning.
It is. Ooh, Chris is getting back into it.
I would say it's like not very well furnished, but
wow.
She doesn't need it. She can do whatever she wants. I don't even think she ever sleeps.
Maybe not.
She's an independent woman. She doesn't need no lounge furniture.
Yeah, she's just walking around looking at stuff, freezing this.
Mm. Have you guys heard about the fan theory that brings together Tangled and Frozen and Little Mermaid?
No.
Uh-uh, that sounds interesting.
It is. It brings together a lot of white princesses. So you see at the coronation scene, because I knew to look for this even though I'd never seen Frozen, Rapunzel is there. Because you know how at the end of Tangled she has like that brown haircut, but she's there. There's like a screenshot that was like an intentional Easter egg. Mm. But then one fan took it like all the way and assumed that Anna and Elsa's parents got in a boat accident on the way to Rapunzel's wedding. And the boat sank, which is why Rapunzel would feel like she has to come to the coronation 3 years later because the parents died on the way to the wedding. Also, Tangled came out 3 years before Frozen, and then Frozen says 3 years later. Mm. So there's that connection. Then the sunken boat that the parents die in is the shipwreck at the beginning of The Little Mermaid that Ariel explores.
God. Well, that shipwreck, I mean, we're led to believe that
that's cool.
All of this stuff happens in Frozen in like some Scandinavian culture, I believe. Or Nordic, something like that, right?
Yeah, but I don't know where they would be going. I don't know where Rapunzel takes place because they would be somewhere between somewhere. And then Ariel, I don't even know where she is. It's all vaguely European.
Little Mermaid happens, I believe, in the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
Like when the...
But there's only white people there.
Well, it's
there's
like the colonialism songs. It's like all the white, I don't know if they're French or something, but they're all, inhabiting those Caribbean islands.
Oh, wait, there's maps. No, okay. No, it tracks. Norway, Denmark is, I believe, Little Mermaid, Germany.
Okay.
Those are the three. I don't have any information beyond Norway, Denmark, Germany. Those are the three countries that is written on the BuzzFeed article.
Well,
I'm a trained journalist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyways, that's a fun
idea. I mean, it's a fun idea to entertain, yeah, of course. Yeah. Anyway, so Elsa builds her ice castle, and in so doing, like, it unleashes this eternal winter. So all, like, the townspeople... They're like, no, oh no. So Anna is like, oh, I have to go to Elsa and get her back so that she can be my sister again and get rid of this eternal winter. In so doing, she meets Kristoff, who helps her get up the mountain. And then Anna confronts Elsa and she's like, no, you have to stay away from me because you won't be safe. And I'm going to put you in danger. And then immediately creates a giant snow monster to chase her away, to keep her safe.
a weird. Yeah. There's so many things that happen in this movie that, like, because it's been 4 years since it came out, I was like, this is not what I thought happened in this movie. Like, it doesn't follow the storyline I had in my head. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weird shit.
In Elsa's defense of creating the snow monster.
Why did she do that?
she just made him, and then all the snow monster initially did was just pick him up and just throw him out. Mm-hmm. And then Anna threw a snowball at him, which is...
Yeah, but he...
Which is...
Rude.
Which is aggressive.
Yeah.
It's aggressive.
Yeah.
I still think that he was in the wrong and that Elsa
the snow
was,
monster?
Yes. And Elsa was wrong for creating such an entity that was capable of such evil.
I think it was misguided. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But okay. She also doesn't seem to have very good control of her powers.
Right.
Which is why she secludes herself.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, by them showing up, she's like, I can't control my powers. I'm not ready. She's not totally like, they're like, no, you just don't believe in yourself. And it's like, no, but also she clearly does. She also can't do it. She can't.
Yeah, yet. I see that. Anyway, so they have to return to Arendelle. Oh, because in this like interaction that Anna and Elsa have, Elsa accidentally attacks her with her ice magic again, but this time in her heart. Mm-hmm. And they go to Kristoff's family and friends, which are, again, the the stone troll people.
They're cute.
They're whatever. Anyway, so the troll king is like, oh, whenever the ice magic attacks you in the heart, the only way to fix that is an act of true love. So they interpret that to mean that Anna needs to receive love's true kiss from her new fiance, Hans. Mm-hmm. So they rush back to the castle. But Hans is like, actually, I'm a murderer who mm-hmm. was here just to plot yep. and conspire against mm-hmm. you to steal mm-hmm. the throne.
Here to plot. Mm-hmm. Hate when he's actually, you think you in love, but actually... He's here to plot. Uh-huh. Oh, I wish I could have said that all the way through.
So then Anna is like dying and Kristoff is like, oh shit, I have to go back because I actually love her, unlike Hans. And then Elsa is like, wait, I fucked everything up. I almost killed my sister. I have to go back to Arendelle too. So there's this like confrontation. Hans is about to kill Elsa and Anna sacrifices herself to save Elsa, which is the act of true love that was needed to melt her icy heart and bring her back to life.
Yes. Love it.
And then, like, Hans gets arrested. Anna and Kristoff share a kiss. And then that's pretty much the end of the movie. And they're like, oh my God, it's summer again. And oh, love is what thaws everything. Mm-hmm. So I just have to feel love because Elsa had been told not to feel anything.
True.
And mm-hmm. now she's like, oh, what if
conceal
I...
it, don't feel it.
Exactly. But if I just feel
wait,
love.
Wait, is that a reference to something?
So everything's fixed and Olaf is still there.
Why doesn't someone take a blowtorch to that thing? It's awful.
Yeah, the opposite of that. They give him a snow cloud.
A personal flurry.
To carry him around.
And his own little Netflix special or whatever the fuck. Oh, no, wait. No. There was that thing that... What movie did that play before?
Coco. It was a 22-minute long Disney short that played in front of Coco, and it was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life, and I'm so
people
upset
were so
it.
Upset about that they stopped showing it. They were like, there's a half-hour Josh Gad... joint. Like, no one would pay for that. It has to be foisted upon you.
Yeah.
God, Josh Gad.
Yeah. So that's the story of Frozen.
Great.
Thanks for the cat.
Thank you so much. Here's some initial thoughts I have. Okay, well, Jamie, you mentioned both the parents dying, so subverting the trope. Because most Disney movies, especially ones that are fairy tales, have like the dead mom trope.
Right.
Where it's a princess and she has no mom, but her dad is still around. This movie, both of her parents are alive, but if you notice, her mom doesn't say anything.
A word, yeah.
She is there, but it's like the king who does all the talking and makes all the decisions. And the mother, I don't think, has a single line.
Not that I notice, but it's bizarre because it's like they do a few tight shots on her giving a meaningful look. And it's like, why can't she just say something? Because mm-hmm. it would be kind of interesting to have introduced that into the dynamic of the parents of like, I wouldn't think it'd be out of the realm of possibility for like, obviously the king has the final word because literal patriarchy, mm-hmm. but to see the queen be like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we shouldn't force our daughters to be separate their whole lives.
Yeah.
Just like a line of that would have been helpful. But you see her give, I think at one point she gives Anna like this look of like, yeah, sucks, don't it? Like, but she doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Was frustrated by that.
Yeah, I think there was easily an opportunity to introduce that sort of dynamic. Cut the scene where Olaf is imagining what summer would be like for him. Like, that does not need to be there.
You'd melt, bitch! You'd melt! I hate him. I hate him so much.
Like, those scenes do not advance the story at all. They shouldn't be there. There should be more time developing. Yeah, like something like the mother character. Instead, we have a snowman on a beach. Right. Mm-hmm. Hilarious. So glad it's there.
I honestly, like, the second that song hit, I was like, I knew this was coming and I'm fast forwarding this shit. But yeah, I mean, even from like a story standpoint, if we're even putting gender aside, like, we're not attached to the parent characters at all.
Right.
Because they are sort of just like mean and misguided and they die and you feel bad because you like Anna and Elsa, but not because you like had any attachment to the
right.
Right.
You're like, oh, they just sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then a few story beats later, it's coronation day. And
there's a whole song
in which Anna sings about how she's so excited for the people to come because she's been so mm-hmm. lonely, which makes sense. Like, she's basically like had to get rid of most of the staff in the castle.
Princesses can't stop being locked in their home.
Right.
Princesses under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that she's excited. But then the song basically shifts to the focus is her like, oh, my God, what if I meet the one? I'm so excited to fall in love today. And then so this story is mostly about her relationship with her sister. Mm. But a large part of her motivation, of Anna's motivation, is falling in love with and being in a relationship with a man. Mm-hmm. I get why they're doing that because this is still a fairy tale and that trope of her whole desire being to fall in love with a man and to end up with a man is subverted at the end.
Right.
But it's just, I don't know, it's just like, well, why can't we just eliminate that altogether?
Yeah, I think that this is like in a way that Moana fortunately doesn't. Frozen like kind of tries to have its cake and eat it too with a lot of the commentary it's making with like, oh yeah, like Anna realizes she doesn't need a man, she still ends up with one. Mm-hmm. But you know, so it's like we're presented with, I mean, I didn't even really have that much of a problem with the coronation thing because I feel like it was commented on enough. Mm-hmm. Of like, oh, love at first sight with strangers is a scary concept to teach to children. And don't do that. And then she, you know, we then see her get to know a guy and then end up with him, which isn't the worst, but it's like, then Disney still has its way with like one of the princesses ends up with a guy at the end. And it's the context has shifted a little, but not quite enough for it to be like, and it was subverted because it, I don't know, it gets like 75% of the way there, or not even that much.
Because initially, what they said is the concept of the movie was to have a movie that wasn't about romantic love.
Right.
Which I think they tried to do, but they, yeah. They,
but then they, she still has just two these characters who end up being
love triangle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like the way that they try to talk that off is like, well, but there's two princesses and only one of them ends up with the guy. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, that's not how that works. That's... Yeah, it's frustrating because it's like it's not that I even have a problem with someone ending up with some, but it's like then don't say you're making this commentary if you're gonna have her end up with a guy at the end,
right?
You know, because then you're not really doing what you said you're doing.
Yeah,
I mean, I can see it where like their relationship isn't the focus of the story, but it is enough of a part of it that you can't ignore it. So. Right. Yeah, I have kind of mixed feelings about it.
And then the switch that they go back because they're like, oh, we have to go find Hans because love, like that pushes such a large part of the story. But then it's like, oh, well, she realizes that's not what it is. But then it's like, oh, this is, but then now she's just going to marry this reindeer guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like who is pretty mean to her.
Who negs her constantly.
Yes.
Very hard.
God.
Always telling her to calm down because women be so emotional.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude. You hang out with a reindeer
all your life.
Your whole life.
Yeah, your only friend and trolls.
Ooh, let's apply the Buscemi test there. Steve Buscemi hanging out with a reindeer his whole life, meets a lady, he's a killer. he's not a love interest.
All right, cuz the movie opens with like young Kristoff and he's like harvesting ice because he's in the ice business.
That's the worst song, by the way.
It's a really, really bad song.
That's the worst song. That's the worst type of song in any.
Why is it in the movie? Like, why do we open that with that? That's insane.
I don't understand what they're really doing either.
They're just like mining ice. They're ice prospectors.
They are ice prospectors.
Yeah, where do they bring it? And they better get it there fast. It's so cold.
Right.
It'll melt. That's the worst song. Second worst song is the one where she's getting ready for the party. I have a mental ranking of the songs.
Wait. What are your hot rankings of the songs?
Okay. I got to write this down.
Yeah. Pull up the soundtrack. Let's figure this out.
All right.
I am genuinely curious.
So from memory that we've got, and I don't know the names of them. Okay. So we got Ice Guys Making Ice is the worst song.
Bad.
Worst. And then next worst is Getting Ready for the Party. First Time in Forever is what it's called. Love is an open door. I forgot.
Oh.
Snowman, I would not die in the heat. Third worst.
Okay.
And then we have the troll song.
Oh, right. The Fixer Upper.
Fixer Upper. It's actually a pretty good song. So I'm going to say Build a snowman.
Chris is a professional musician. That's right. So what he says,
what I say goes.
Yes. This is your wheelhouse.
Yes.
We're letting you fly.
Okay.
Here.
So worst, second worst, third worst, okay, and then Build a Snowman is fourth, but not worst. It's getting good now.
It's getting
good. I did my ranking really weird. And then I would say Fixer Upper, fifth worst, which is actually pretty good. And then sixth worst is Love is an Open Door, which is actually a very good song. And then seventh worst is Let It Go, which is...
And seventh worst equals best?
The best. Also known as the best.
Yeah, seventh worst.
But that's how you're framing it.
Are there only seven songs? I have another big issue
then
with
maybe
Frozen.
Maybe we're forgetting one or two. But
I feel like there's a lot of mini songs where you're
there's
like...
There's like a reprise.
Some false starts, some reprises.
Oh, his little reindeer song in the shed.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, fuck that
song. Let's not count
it. I wouldn't even count it.
But the ice song, the ice ground song is still worse than that song.
Right. But like the last half hour of the movie, no songs, which bothers me. It troubles me.
They're too busy. True. They're too busy doing stuff.
But I think
you should never have a song. If that's all it takes.
It's totally weird. Yeah. It's like, yeah. I was reading through, and I think that this is kind of like emblematic of how hard it is to get a cohesive, cogent story about women told at all, especially on this high a level. Where it's all, I mean, it's like John Lasseter, which is a whole other thing to unpack because he was very involved in this. But like, if you read through the writing process of this movie, it's crazy how much changes over the course of time, where it starts out good sister, evil sister, and where Elsa's pure evil and she freezes Anna's heart on purpose.
Yeah,
and,
like right out the gate.
Yeah, like woman on woman, straight up, like sisters hating each other for basically no reason. And they brought in a female screenwriter, Jennifer Lee, who also co-directs the movie, also wrote the screenplay for Wreck-It Ralph. But they do another draft of it, and this time it's like Elsa's less mean, but she still is hurting Anna on purpose because she's jealous of her. And like, but that's like how these movies have always been written, of like, if we're putting it on like, you know, a princess and any stepmother, any second wife,
right?
That's like the dynamic. And when you go through the history of it, it took a couple years for this movie to get written in its current way, which is still not perfect, but it's at least you're viewing the sisters as like equals, you know, instead of like good and bad. It's just crazy how hard it is to get a story about two women told that isn't like based around jealousy or like one hating the other or whatever. So
right. I mean, yeah, this movie subverts at least some of the tropes of a Disney fairy tale princess story, but it still adheres to a lot of them in the sense that, so I mean, Anna is the main character. She's the protagonist. We see the story from her point of view. She's the one with the most agency and bearing on this story. She decides on her own that she's going to set off sort of on her own adventure to go and bring Elsa back so that they can figure out how to melt this eternal winter. But
has three male cohorts by the time she gets there.
And like, she basically, she sets off on her own, but then almost immediately needs the help of a man. And that's when we meet Kristoff. And then there's that scene where they're being attacked by wolves, which, what is it with the evil representation of wolves in Disney movies? I mean, gosh, those poor...
Wow. They're anti-wolf.
They're living in the pro-wolf agenda.
You know what? For our wolf listeners out there, like they would be upset.
Big wolf community.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
We have a lot of wolf fans.
I get along really well with coyotes.
Saw a coyote yesterday.
Wow.
Driving.
Oh,
I was driving.
Wait, the coyote was not driving?
No. Coyote was just looking at another dog.
Oh, see, they do kind of just look like sick dogs, so it gets confusing.
Yeah.
Anyways. I think that would offend our coyote listeners.
I've almost touched a coyote multiple times and then been like, that dog's so sick.
No. Well, anyway, moving on from wolf-like creatures. So the wolves are attacking them. She's like, I want to help. And Kristoff's like, no, I don't trust your judgment because you just got engaged yesterday to a man that you've hardly
met. He's so mean to her. Yeah. He acts so indifferent to her. And then when that comes up, he's like, what? That's crazy. And it's just like, what do you care?
Right. Yeah. Hard to say. But yeah, he doesn't want her help, but she helps him anyway and actually ends up saving him a couple times. So we see the reverse of a woman. I don't think there's any time, at least in that sequence, where she is damseled. So it subverts the trope
right.
of her being, you know, damseled and needing to be rescued by a man, because instead she saves him. But then as the story goes on, more male characters show up, like Olaf, who is not
well, snowman,
a man.
Yeah, I guess
yeah
so.
He's
snowman.
Male-identifying,
yeah.
you know, voiced by a male-identifying actor. So
Josh Gad.
Don't bring up Josh Gad again.
I will say also in the notes for the way this movie was written, because I think that there's a very clear parallel for this Josh Gad character that drives me crazy. Jennifer Lee, who wrote the movie, tried to write Olaf out multiple times, and they would not let her do it because you need a cute little sidekick because it makes cute stuffed animals. This right. is the same thing that ruined what would have been a great movie, Treasure Planet.
Oh.
There's a robot named Ben in Treasure Planet that ruins the whole movie, and you're like, that's a studio note. Why can't they just get the fucking thing out of there? And they're like, but backpacks.
But merchandising.
What's Treasure Planet?
Treasure Planet is actually very steampunk, which and it's fucked up that I love it so much. But
steampunk's back, baby.
Steampunk has
Westworld.
To go. Oh, what a bird but robot. yeah, it's like a steampunk reimagining of Treasure Island. And it's
okay.
really good, except they ruin it in the second half by adding in a really loud, obnoxious sidekick named Ben. But anyways, they tried to write out Olaf. Also, they originally rejected the ending of this movie multiple times. Like
the studio did?
Yeah, mm-hmm. like the sisters realizing that sisterly love could be more powerful than a man you had just met was rejected over and over and over.
Oh, we are not surprised.
Yeah, so.
Well, how did they get it through?
Weirdly, problematic John Lasseter ended up vouching for the ending and said, like, I've never seen a movie do this before. I think we should give it a try and test screenings. And if it doesn't work, we'll go full hetero.
Yeah.
and also, this is the first Disney animated movie ever that is co-directed by a woman.
Wow. Oh. So wow. It took a very long time.
Yeah, it took, 100 years?
Literally
100 years. Interesting.
Well, this is an example of a story where the two main characters of Anna and Elsa are women, but pretty much every other character is a man between yeah. Kristoff and Hans, Sven the reindeer, who I thought was a moose for a while.
All our moose listeners, Kate.
the Duke of Wesselton, his two like bodyguards, the Troll yeah. King, all of those characters.
I think the only other person implied to be a woman is a troll.
Yes.
Also, the only, this is maybe a whole other can of something, but the only implied like person of color in the movie is also just a troll.
Yeah, that's yeah. true.
Oh, is it the one who at the very beginning with young Kristoff and young Sven?
Yeah.
Like, hi. And she's like, oh, you're cute. I'm taking you.
Yeah. And she also yeah. is like, has a very gospel singery type voice in the.
I think it's coded. In, yeah.
The, yeah. And anytime I see that Mickey Mouse that's in the beginning of this one, it's like from like 1920s. I was like, that Mickey Mouse is racist.
Oh, Steamboat Willie?
Yeah.
Racist. Steamboat Willie, I mean, that's a name that sounds racist and is.
Well, yeah. I wanted to talk about how, yeah, all the characters in this movie are white. And granted, it takes place in, we can assume, sometime before like 19th or 18th century Scandinavia, which is still an extremely white area.
But it's also like a magical
right.
fairy tale.
Fiction, yeah.
But Anna and Elsa are, you know, conventionally beautiful by Western standards. They're very thin. They have like that body type that we see in almost every Disney princess movie where it's like perfectly, it's like, you know, proportioned in such a way, you know, very narrow waist, like wide hips. Pretty sexualized for, you know, a movie that's directed towards children.
More covered than you would find most princesses.
True.
At least they are dressed weather appropriate, which
although
most
sometimes they aren't,
are not.
Because like Elsa, after she turns everything into winter, is still wearing like the top of her dress is still mostly exposed, like her shoulders.
But does she get cold?
Maybe
I mean,
not.
I'm not.
That
like,
isn't it.
She does say the cold
sort of
never bothered me anyway.
Yeah,
you're welcome
right.
for my beautiful singing voice.
Thank you.
I would have to imagine she, but also it's like that is a choice.
She
that
has
is.
More hair than a human. I know that. She has upon her head more hair than a human.
Than like an actual person would have if she.
It's a lot of hair.
It's yeah.
If you count the strands, which I have not.
Oh, okay.
But I've read about.
Excuse me. Oh wait. Okay.
We see these two characters in this very specific body type that we see over and over again in Disney movies. And there's nothing wrong with having a body type like this. But when it's pretty much the only representation of a body type that you see in these movies that are largely being seen by young girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
These characters in these movies are influencing these young audiences. And I think that movies have the responsibility to show a vast range of body types and skin colors and everything else. But when they're almost always like this hourglass, very thin waist, very, by Western standards, conventionally the ideal, that is irresponsible. And
that goes beyond just the movie, too, because when we're talking about Disney movies, we're also talking about merchandising and like what are studio executives and people with money comfortable putting out into the world.
Right.
Because kids are, I mean, as someone working at a school when this fucking movie came out, every kid had Frozen merchandise.
Oh, and the dolls?
Right. So, yeah. And it's like, if you see that same image over and over and over, like, this is the body you're going to see. Every kid has merchandise with this body type on it, this skin color, this, like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's, there's no argument that it doesn't fuck with you to some extent. And there's no alternative with this movie with the type of body that you see.
Right.
It's just really the only difference you get is the number of braids.
Right.
Yeah. You get the one or you get the two.
But that's filled with more hair than...
400,000 strands I'm seeing.
That's more than a human.
That's a lot. It's a lot of CG hair.
Yeah.
Render that head, hackers.
Render that head.
Render this head of hair, you dirty little hackers.
Oh, so speaking of the songs, the Fixer Upper song, I find
which is the
to be
fifth worst.
The fifth worst, yes.
Third best.
We are not framing them that way.
Fifth worst. Third best.
That song, again, one of the many scenes in this movie that is unneeded, but it just drives home the point of this movie's agenda of like still having Anna be in a like romantic relationship or a potential one. Because like he brings her there to his adopted family of troll people. And he's like, hey, she's dying. And we're like, we don't care about that right now. Actually, we're going to sing a song about how you should love our son. And it's just like, why is that there? Why is that a focal point?
Right. There's a part in the song where they say like something about how like how he hides that he's the honest good, which is such a weird line.
Yeah.
It's just like he's a real nice guy, but you wouldn't know it
based on the way he treats you.
You know what? I'm taking.
Wow.
You know what?
Rankings are
Fixer
changing.
Upper is now fourth worst, and Build a Snowman is fifth worst.
Okay,
I'm okay with that switch.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
I'm okay.
Great.
Okay, so then the next story beat after that song is when the trolls are like, "Hey, you need an act of true love to melt this frozen heart." They interpret that to mean, because, you know, they've probably read a bunch of fairy tales themselves.
These trolls.
Like, the trolls.
Anna, DreamWorks trolls.
Everyone involved are like, oh, yeah, that must mean a true love's kiss.
Which is another attempt at them subverting.
Right. I think this movie sends a positive message to its young viewers that rather than a hetero kiss between a man and a woman, it was like the familial love between two sisters that saves the day. Mm-hmm. Because up until that point, most Disney fairy tales where if there is a curse to be broken or if there is something that needs to be fixed, it is often a hetero kiss that saves the day.
Right.
So at least this movie does not go in that direction. There is a kiss, though, at the end. I think this is noteworthy because Kristoff asks for consent.
True.
He does.
He says...
Actually, that's a great point. Yeah.
Because she replaced his sled that she fucked up like she said she would. Mm. Anna did.
Fair.
She's rich.
She's extremely wealthy.
That was the only thing I thought when she's like, I'll replace it and everything in it. I was like, well, good for you.
Right. So he's really happy about his new sled. And he's like, oh, my God, I'm so happy I could kiss you. But I won't. But could I? Maybe? Can I? And then she's like, you may. Mm-hmm. And she gives him a little peck on the cheek. And then he's like, and then they go.
The Caitlin kiss sound is my worst nightmare. It sounds like you're taking something from somebody.
Yeah. I'm sucking the soul out of everyone I kiss.
Or a cartoon character running away really fast.
Oh, yeah. Leaving the frame.
Yeah.
So I think this movie does send a very positive message to its young audiences that asking for consent to kiss someone
is actually hot.
It's good. Yeah, it's hot and it's cute and it should be done more often.
Yes.
So that I think is worth noting. I wanted to talk a little bit about Elsa's powers. Because
her chirokinetic magic.
Whoa, is that cryo? What it's called?
Yeah. It's off the top of my head, yeah.
Cryokinetic
magic.
Wow.
Who she only shares his powers with Iceman from the X-Men and Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat.
What about...
Wow.
I forget the character's name.
And some other things, too. But those are the only ones I committed to memory.
What about Mr. Freeze?
Mr. Freeze himself.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Batman.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay. Yes. Who? What's the character? Oh, is it Friezo?
Frozone?
From The Incredibles.
I think it's
Frozone.
Frozone.
That sounds terrible. Wait, is that really the name of the character?
No, I have no idea.
No, I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah, it is.
Frozone.
Wow.
Frozone.
That's, well, a lot of characters, it turns out, have this power. Yeah. This, what is it?
It's, of course, cryokinetic magic.
Oh, of course. Of course it is. All the characters that you mentioned, all the other ones, were they all men?
Sub-Zero, I think, is the only one I'm on the fence about. But it probably
is that the Mortal Kombat one.
I can't believe that character's name is Frozone.
It's like Ozone, but Frozen.
Sub-Zero, what's
he
say?
Yeah, but the only black character in that movie is named Frozone.
Yeah, it's not good.
That's not good. Well, I guess we got to do an Incredibles episode. Yeah, that can't be right.
This sequel's coming out.
It's true. True.
What is Sub-Zero's thing he says?
You're about to get real cold.
Scorpion says, get over here.
One of my favorite bad movies, Jack Frost.
Oh, yeah. I recently just watched that. Recently.
That movie's crazy.
Christmas time I watched it.
Wait, who made you?
This Christmas, 2017.
The Michael Keaton one?
Yeesh.
Who made you watch it?
I think it might have been self-inflicted.
That one, because he's like a bad dad who dies.
He's like a rocking blues magician.
In like a cover band.
Yeah. Well, they seems like they're going to get signed. I don't know if they're a cover band, but they might as well be.
He dies. And then comes back as a terrifying anthropomorphic snowman and has to repair his relationship with his children. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's real
It's
bad.
Really scary.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Very scary.
And it works.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's the scariest part of all.
So in movies, when women are given powers, they are usually either an evil witch or a supervillain. Examples include the Wicked Witch of the West, Ursula, the evil queen from Snow White, Maleficent.
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa.
Wow, tell us how you really feel about Melissa McCarthy. Jesus.
She's an evil witch. what I meant to say was...
love that new element of Bechdel cast lore is that Caitlin believes Melissa McCarthy is pure evil.
who I actually think is evil is Maleficent. There we go.
There it is.
From Sleeping Beauty, the Ice Queen Witch from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Mystique from X-Men. We've got Poison Ivy, where there's a whole laundry list of others. So it's either that, or if a woman is given powers in movies, she's perceived as being like too dangerous and that she should not harness these powers or that she just shouldn't like use them in general. We see this from like Rogue in X-Men. I feel like this is a thing in Wanda from the Avengers. Princess Leia, we don't even know she has force powers pretty much until like five movies into the franchise.
The Love Fairy in Pussy Saga is...
Oh, wow.
Doesn't use her powers right away, but then once she's liberated...
Another great example.
Just naming a lot of lore.
Sure.
Did you beat the game?
it's impossible to beat the game. It actually ends up kind of becoming this existential nightmare where you're said that...
Is that why it says you won't last 5 minutes?
You're given... You can last 10 hours and not... They give you a goal and then I achieved the goal and there was nowhere... No one acknowledged that I achieved the goal. And they're like, you should give all your points and open a movie theater. And it ends up being this weird real estate scam. Although, it's an existential nightmare.
No one probably plays it for 10 hours.
Yeah, they know they don't expect you to get that far.
Yeah.
I was completely horny neutral. played for 10 straight hours and I was like, I'm ready to rescue the poet Sappho, which was the goal set at the beginning of the game. And then I went to the love fairy who had given me the phone where I get all the hentai sex. after I solve every puzzle, it's my reward.
Sure.
Is my hentai sex. And I return the phone. I say, here's the cum of 5 women, as I told you I'd bring back. Release the poet Sappho. And she says, do you want to open a movie theater? And that you can't. And then you just, they drop it. They don't expect you to get that far.
Wow. Rude.
Anyways, I with women having powers.
Right. When men have powers in movies, it's like makes them strong and powerful. There are some exceptions, and sometimes, yes, like they have to keep them a secret from their family or from whatever. But by and large, a man having powers in movies means he's a superhero or he's going to save the day and he's just strong and powerful. Or even if he's like a villain, like he's still crafty, cunning, like, wow, like, look how cool. So this applies to this movie, Frozen, because she is given this like awesome power. We don't really understand where it comes from or why this happens, but there's, you know, it's a magical world with stone troll people and snowmen that can come to life. So sure, those are the rules of the world and we just suspend our disbelief, I guess.
World where Josh Gad can exist freely, including ours, I have a problem with.
But so she's given powers, but the whole time she is encouraged not to use them, or that it's going to be too dangerous. And it's just like this I feel like if a little boy discovered that he had these same powers, his parents in whatever movie it was would be like, wow, these are cool, you have to harness these and learn how to like channel them and make yourself awesome.
Well, I think that the story at least gives you a reason why they try to suppress her powers, which is that she hurts her sister.
Right.
I think that the punishment that they come up with, given that they seem to have unlimited means, is a little harsh, and they could have maybe consulted another third party. But I guess the trolls are like, keep
but like,
them
why?
Forever.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, that's like, I thought was
yeah,
bad writing.
I don't understand why they had to be. Keep them separated as the
and then also like realistically we're supposed to believe they actually remained separate that whole time
even when they were dead
away, right?
Even when their parents were dead,
right? I'm like, why couldn't you just hang out now,
like their funeral? They didn't go to that? Or was the whole funeral just putting that piece of black cloth
drapo,
over there?
Draped it over
photo.
The
yeah. Drapo mouth over here.
Drapo.
Drapo Malfoy that thing up and send it off. But they... what I was going to say is, I feel like her powers being suppressed is obviously... I feel like the movie at least makes it clear that they're doing the wrong thing by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that eventually, by the end of the movie, it is changed and she is able to recognize that her powers do have value and it's just a matter of how she uses them.
True.
But I had a problem with that. I don't think this happens with male characters, at least as often. And I don't watch movies where people have superpowers very much because I'm a fucking adult. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. But the fact that Elsa's powers, every time it goes wrong, is because it's her powers are sort of dictated by her emotions is something that I found a little bit annoying of like, well, she just can't get her emotions under control, which is a common criticism of women.
Yeah.
So that's why her powers keep hurting people, is because like her emotions aren't in check. That's not something you hear about when a guy is like, I mean, there's a million montages of a man honing his powers, but it's not quite as put upon as like, well, you're like, emotions are an issue.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like a fairy tale version of saying like, women be crazy.
Right. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. So that was my ish.
And yeah, the movie does make an attempt to say like, oh, this was the wrong way to go about this because her suppressing those emotions that apparently like exacerbate her ice powers. I'm sorry, her cryo.
It's of course called cryokinetic magic.
Magic. that.
But still, it's like by the end, she hones her powers by keeping her emotions more in check. Right? Like, I feel like that's not fully...
Well, you could argue that, to me, it's she realizes that love and, like, letting people in is the thing that allows her to control... Or that at least allows her to unfreeze the eternal winter and to, like, thaw it all out.
Being but that's vulnerable also... is a horrible lesson. If you're vulnerable, you'll just get gaslighted by a YouTuber. That's what happens when you're vulnerable with yourself.
Well, the problem is, that's one of the reasons I don't think this movie is very good or very well written, is that the rules of her powers and just the world building in general is not very good, and it leads to some story problems and stuff like that. But, at least the movie, as we've discussed before, subverts enough of the, like, Disney fairy tale tropes that it isn't, like, another replica of some of the more problematic ones that we've talked about, like Snow White.
Right.
I
mean, Frozen is considerably less problematic than most princess movies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, that does not mean it does a good job. That is just such a low bar to clear.
Right.
Perhaps all of these problems will be fixed in Frozen 2. November 24th, 2019.
Is that really happening?
Is that your plug?
Yeah, that's my plug.
I'd like to plug Frozen 2. It really needs a big marketing boost. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I would be interested in because, I mean, you think between late 2013 and now, there has been a pretty significant cultural shift that I would hope would be reflected in the movie, but I don't know. And speaking of, I remember at the time of this coming out, a lot of the conversation around this movie was that some people felt, and it is certainly not explicitly stated by the movie in any way and carefully done to not state that, that Elsa is coded queer.
Mm. Right.
That's something I've heard over and over.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, even a couple years ago, Disney would never, like, Disney notoriously codes characters queer, but as bad.
As villains.
Queer villains.
Yes.
Like, that is
right.
Their bread and butter. And then this way, I think it's interesting that many people read Elsa as coded queer. I don't disagree with it. I certainly see what they're saying. But I feel like part of the reason that that is, and it is ultimately a net positive thing, I think, for kids seeing the movie. But I think that the reason that happened is because she started as a villain. In the first draft of the character, she was a queer villain character. They softened her to the point where she was an equally likable character to the protagonist. But, like, that element of the character, I think, like, to some extent stayed intact because... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like the way that Disney codes characters as queer besides evil is alone.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is what is the reason that people were perceiving her or feeling that she was coded as being queer? Is it only because she doesn't have a love interest?
I think that that's part of the reason. I'd have to go deep into I think that there's a number of ways to come at it. I know that for a lot of people, I mean, just based on the research I did when the movie came out, people interpreted her being isolated and not pursuing any love interest in the movie as a possible way of queer coding, which is kind of like depressing when you think about it. It's like, a queer character has to be alone. And a straight character has to end up with someone. Like, it just, the rules of that world become very fucked very quickly.
And with straight characters in this movie, as an example, there's often more than one person pursuing her because she's got, I mean, Hans ends up being a bad guy who's not actually a love interest of hers, but she doesn't know that until toward the end.
Yeah.
So as far as she's concerned, he loves her and he's her fiance. And then meanwhile, like, Kristoff is like the scrappy, mean person who is also secretly developing a crush on her, but he could never tell her that because he's too mean or whatever. But yeah, that I'd be interested to learn more about that.
Do you remember though? There was like that big movement on Twitter. I remember this just from being a frequent tweeter. There was like
brag.
But there was like hashtag give Elsa a girlfriend. Like people were very deep into viewing Elsa as like a positive queer role model, which again I think is like a net positive move. But also that you have to dig through so many layers of creating meaning where the movie isn't necessarily giving you much to go on to find a queer character in a movie for kids is like frustrating.
And right. Wasn't the most recent Beauty and the Beast the first time they had an
Josh Gad?
And it's Josh Gad.
Which
it's
is why I don't hate him.
No, no.
Wow.
First of all, that like queer moment in Beauty and the Beast is total bullshit.
Sure.
And Josh Gad is horrible. But getting back to queer undertones in Frozen, I'm seeing, and this makes sense. Again, it's like open to interpretation and everyone's going to view this movie differently. I viewed Elsa's suppression of her powers as more of like a femininity thing of like, here, you're awesome, but keep it hidden so that you are able to move through the world and, you know, like don't become too powerful. I viewed that just seeing it today as like a feminine thing. But sure. A lot of people view that as the experience of being in the closet.
Uh-huh.
That creates Elsa's arc as like hiding herself away from the world, isolating herself because she's not comfortable with herself. She doesn't know how to be around other people. And I guess that is too many viewers read as the experience of being in the closet and then going back into the world as your authentic self.
Looking at it through that lens, yeah, that's really interesting because she does have that Let It Go, very empowering song slash moment. It's the
seventh worst song.
So that you could maybe argue is like a parallel to her coming out.
Part of me is like, I guess that's kind of cool that they, if that was like their idea to kind of leave it open to interpretation so many different people could insert themselves into the experience,
right,
and put their own experience into it. But it would be way more cool if there was a person that was like explicitly.
Right, because I don't think a lot of kids are like watching this. And
right.
You know, they're not, and that's again the intended audience of this movie. So for children's movies, things like that, I feel like do have to be more explicit because they're not going to get
for
the
sure.
subtext.
Right, absolutely.
I agree. I just think it was interesting that it had such a profound effect. And then also the inverse of that being that churches got mad that Elsa didn't have a boyfriend.
Oh.
Really?
And also viewed that as queer coding of not having a boyfriend equals you are gay, which is bad news for me in high school. So anyways.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that is, I was aware of that going into this and had a few notes to that.
For some reason, I didn't remember that happening at all, but I am not as frequent of a tweeter, so maybe that's why.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And that's something I'm very interested to see if they do anything with in Frozen 2 because it was such a big response. And it's like, are they going to do something good?
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine that Disney would commit to her being alone again for a whole movie.
Right. But if they give her a boyfriend, people will be mad.
Of course. Yeah, exactly.
People
yeah, definitely.
Will be mad. So let's see. Jennifer Lee. I mean, I'm pretty down for Jennifer Lee, the writer. I don't know if she's writing Frozen 2. I hope she is.
She is.
Because it seems like
I don't know
pushing...
if she's writing. She's at least directing it.
Okay.
Co-directing, I think, again. And there was
she is the writer.
There's been a few like little Frozen things, like the Olaf's Frozen Adventure. I didn't see that. There's something called Frozen Fever that I hated.
That sounds like a paradox.
Yeah. When I watched it, it made me realize that Frozen has been for kids all along. And I was like, wait a second. This is a cartoon for children.
Wow.
But it's also something that anyone of any age can enjoy.
Yeah, and I did.
If it appeals to them.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I much prefer Moana. Zootopia was great.
Do they sing in Zootopia?
They don't.
Mm.
Well, something we see in Frozen that we don't see in Moana as much is that is Idina Menzel. And I think that's really worth bringing up. Is one big thing Moana has going for it is A, it's a better movie. B, Josh Gad has nothing, not anywhere near it, which is great.
Moana 2, though.
I know, they recast Josh Gad as Moana.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's actually, people are freaking out that Josh Gad is Moana, which is what the poster says.
Josh Gad is Moana too.
Yeah, he's Moana too. They jumped the shark. Moana has an evil twin. It's Josh Gad. It's insane. He appears as himself, a real man.
Wow. Not even computer animated?
No, just Josh Gad. Basically wearing his Steve Wozniak outfit. It's horrible.
Oh my God.
It's horrible. But the theme of two strongly bonded women in a Disney movie who are not constantly being pitted against each other. We see Moana has a close connection with her family. Mm-hmm. But I did like seeing Elsa and Anna. Like, I hadn't seen a relationship like that in a kid's movie before, of like a strong familial bond mm-hmm. between two characters that are very different. That, and I mean, we already sort of unpacked the visual aspect of it that's a problem, but like, I don't know. I thought it was really nice, and I even teared up once or twice because aww. I'm very fragile. But yeah, like the theme of like sisterly love and two strongly bonded women who have a sordid history, and that one almost killed the other twice. it happens, but they still are able to resolve their differences. And I don't know, just like someone you're close with when you're young, and then you grow apart because whatever, your parents are on a boat and it sinks, and then you have to learn to love each other again as adults. I thought it was nice.
That is nice. I think one of the problems with it, though, is that we don't see them on screen together that much.
No.
Because either Elsa is in seclusion, or she just runs away and builds her ice palace. Like, if you counted up the total amount of time that they are on screen together interacting, I imagine that it's like 8 minutes or less. Like, it's a very small part of
what
the
movie. What if they get to know each other? They don't even really like each other.
That would be a wild. Frozen 2.
They barely have hung out with each other.
Frozen 2, they like each other's posts on Instagram, but other than that, kind of radio silence. which is, again, another thing that, I don't know. I'm standing out for Jennifer Lee right now because I'm reading through all the stuff she pushed for in the movie that they were just like, fuck off.
Because
she was pushing for them to be together more in the movie. She was also pushing for them to know each other after their parents died. And the powers that be were like, no, we want them apart for the whole movie, which we can interpret as a way to, I mean, there's, I guess, sort of a narrative reason to do that. But by the end, I think there's no excuse for them to be apart mm-hmm. for so long.
Right.
So you can shoehorn in all your bullshit Josh Gads. Like, keeping the two interesting female leads apart just gives them the opportunity to sprinkle in all these other dudes.
Right. Yeah. Should we figure out whether or not this movie passes the Bechdel test?
It does.
It does. Really early on. Elsa and Anna as children, Anna runs into the room. She's like, wake up, let's play. But then she says, do you want to build a snowman?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Is it pass the test if they're talking about snowman?
How come it's never snow woman? How come no one is ever like, let's go outside and build a snow woman or snow gender queer person?
That's cool.
My brother and I made a snow Toni Collette one year. We were a Toni Collette household.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyways. Toni Collette.
Yeah, she's very talented.
Yeah, she is.
We all felt that way.
So that scene, I think there's at least a two-line exchange there. Later on, when they're both adults at the coronation ceremony, Elsa and Anna are like, oh my God, is this what a party looks like? And then we cut to a bunch of people standing around not really enjoying themselves. And then...
I have had that thought a lot, though. Is this what a party looks like?
Yeah. And then they tell each other that they look beautiful, and then they smell chocolate together, and then
yes.
Anna's like, I wish it could be like this forever, and Elsa's like, it can't because of my powers that you don't know about. I think that's pretty much the end of that conversation, but I would say that by and large like passes the whole way through. I don't think there's any mention of any men there at all. They're not in that many scenes together. You think it would pass more frequently, but it really doesn't. I think like the next time is when Anna is like, hey, will you give your blessing for me to marry Hans? And rightfully so. Elsa's like, no.
No, bitch.
But that does not pass the Bechdel test because they are talking about Hans. Yeah. Later, though, when Anna goes to Elsa's ice palace, that passes because they're just like, hey, come back to Arendelle. And she's
almost
like,
that whole
no.
scene passes. Yeah.
After that, it's probably not till the very end when they like reunite.
Yeah. There's opportunities that were missed right and left. If we had given perhaps, I see a scene that I think would have made a lot of sense and would have worked would have been a scene between either the mother and Anna or the mother and Elsa. Mm-hmm. It would have helped the story, and that would have been a way to shoehorn it in. If we have to have a fucking snowman, make it not be Josh Gad. cast
Melissa McCarthy.
I was just going to say, evil witch.
Yeah. Caitlin's mortal enemy, Melissa McCarthy.
I really like Melissa McCarthy. I just want everyone to know.
It's crazy how evil you think Melissa McCarthy is, and we all disagree.
Also,
there's a dartboard in the studio with Melissa McCarthy's face on it.
It's so weird because it's like she's so talented, and she really like knew when to steal a scene in Gilmore Girls and when to hang back. She's a giving performer. I think we should give her more credit, Caitlin.
I agree. Also, like, the main stone troll person could have been a woman, and she could have talked to...
The moose, the reindeer could have been a woman. Whatever it was. Yeah, there were plenty of opportunities for this movie to pass it for, but it does pass.
Definitely, yeah. Shall we rate on our nipple scale?
Yeah.
0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal of women. This is another tough one where, like I said, I think it's net positive in terms of the message that it sends, particularly to its young audience, in that it shows women being active in the story. It shows them having agency and making choices that have bearing on the story. They are, for the most part, not damseled in any way, the way that a lot of Disney princesses are for most of the stories that they're in.
Right.
I think that having it not be a hetero love kiss that saves the day, but instead being a act of
a yes
love
queen
between
sister.
Sisters, right, that solves the conflict, the asking for consent to kiss her at the end, I really, really enjoyed. So I think there is a lot of good things to be taken away, but the fact that there's still several love stories that are feel kind of shoehorned in there that don't really need to be there. Mm-hmm. The fact that we don't see Anna and Elsa interacting more, the fact that their, you know, body types are the same body type we see over and over again in Disney princess movies and in almost every movie in general. I think that there's still work to be done. So hopefully in Frozen 2.
So come on, this year or
November
next year?
November 24th.
This year?
2019.
Oh, wow.
Which is next year.
Right, I think.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yes. So I'm going to give it a 3.5 nipples. Maybe 4? I don't know. Let's say 3.75.
Okay.
Wow, a first. Back to fast first.
Yeah, 3.75. I'll give 2 to Anna, 1 to Elsa, the 3/4 nipple to the mom who didn't say a damn word in the entire movie and then died tragically in a boat accident. Not unlike most of the people
accident.
On Titanic.
True. Yeah, very true.
What if, oh my God, what if Elsa created the iceberg in Titanic?
She was so emotional. Women are too emotional and it sinks the Titanic eventually.
Oh my God.
God, women are bad.
Yeah, she probably like made a glacier in her, like, you know, fury.
Mm-hmm.
Her
mm-hmm.
flurry fury. Yep. There
yep.
it is.
Flurry fury.
And then it breaks off centuries later.
Right.
Floats into the Atlantic Ocean. The Titanic hits it. That's what happened. That's canon.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, who's next?
Whew. I was going to go 2.5. I think I'll go 3.
Okay.
It frustrates me when movies like this, because I liked this movie. There's so much net positive that you just described. I also think it's very significant that this is the first Disney animated movie that is at least partially directed by a woman,
mm-hmm.
written entirely by a woman. But no, I'm going back to 2.5 because there are so many missed opportunities, and it really frustrates me when a movie tries to capitalize on how forward-thinking it is when it still features so many themes and through lines that are regressive or at least maintaining a status quo.
True.
That has existed in these franchises for years and years. True. So mostly, I mean, 2.5 based on sheer missed potential of mm-hmm. what this movie could have been. I totally agree with what you're saying with reinforcing the conventional Western beauty standard body image on such a high level. Shoehorning in the love story was obnoxious and not totally necessary. And just the missed opportunity for women to be present in this story that was actively thwarted by the movie itself, by keeping women away from each other, because their scenes together I really love. And I think that they're like so nice and special. Mm-hmm. And yeah, taking the voice from the mom, why do that? Like, why is that necessary? I don't know.
Yeah.
it sucks because it's a good movie. I think net positive, and you know, girls who are in school now and this is their movie are way better off than we were, where we were like, oh, the girl who fuck a dog is my hero.
Who's that?
That's Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, right, yeah, of course.
The girl who French the dog is my favorite girl.
And
I became
off.
That girl.
You're always Frenching coyotes.
I'm approaching coyotes on the street, thinking, conflating it with true love.
And
it's confusing.
And we're even better off than our parents' generation were. That was like growing up.
Yeah,
with,
they're like, fall asleep. Maybe someone will show up and kiss you without checking. Like,
right.
It does demonstrate progress.
Progress is very slow, though. That's not an excuse, but it
very
it
slow
tends to be extremely slow.
But there are so many, and just like reading about how the writer director of this movie was trying to push it forward and was actively thwarted by the system she was working within, sucks. I'm glad she was pushing, mm-hmm. and I think that this movie would have sucked if she wasn't pushing,
yeah.
Oh, right.
Really pushing. So it's like progress, but not enough progress. I hate that it's still like princesses will sooner French a dog than be queer. That's like crazy.
Yeah.
So 2.5 for me, 1 to Anna, 1 to Elsa, and I'm giving 1 to Gad.
Wow,
unexpected. Charitable.
Giving 1 to Gad. Listen, he needs a win from me personally. Other than that, he's very wealthy and doing great.
Yeah, I think you spent more time talking about how much you hate them than Anna and Elsa appear on screen together in the
wow.
movie Frozen.
Oh, called out. Part of the problem.
The only thing that I feel more strongly than loving women is hating Josh Gad. What if, okay, and also Alfred Molina as Olaf. What if,
okay.
Oh. Any female identifying person or Alfred Molina.
Yeah. Sure.
Also, this movie, I have to go back, does not pass the Bechdel test because Josh Gad appears in it.
Okay, that's your opinion, and
right,
I do not stand
that's
by
new
that.
Hard rule. New hard Bechdel test. A new Bechdel test. Does Josh Gad appear in the movie?
Chris?
Okay, I wrote down three.
Three nipples.
Three nipples.
Three nippies.
A lot of the stuff about, like, the mom not speaking, that's pretty crazy. How there are literally only two or three potentially women in the movie.
And one of them dies almost immediately.
Right.
And one of them is a troll whose
right.
name we never know, and we don't know anything about her, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think if it was like on a scale of like all the Disney movies, then it would be like higher than three, because
yeah.
this is until Moana.
Right, which we gave, I think, 5 nipples across the board.
We were like coming that entire episode. We're like, ah! It is a very good movie.
I love it so much.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and then, of course, I have my issues with
the songs.
In the songs, you know,
right.
of course.
Yeah.
Oh, you've recopied your list.
Well, just to make it clear for myself. So just to clarify, the 7th worst song is Let It Go.
Which is, right. You're also the best, but yeah,
well,
7th
yeah.
worst.
To me,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
the best.
Yeah.
Right.
Number 6 worst is Love Is an Open Door.
Mm-hmm,
it's just
mm-hmm.
a nice song.
It is. Beautiful.
Number 5, I Wish to Build a Snowman.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I wish to.
Number 4, Fixer Upper, the Trolls song.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Trolls. I know that
and,
they're just backpacks.
Are they the Trolls?
Are they the Dreamworks
I never
trolls?
Got the answer.
No.
No, because those are Dreamworks.
They look like the Trolls.
But those Trolls aren't made of stone.
That's just like a weird Jeffrey
got the
Katzenberg.
Same if you saw
out.
Cartman, but he was made of stone, you say.
That's
Cartman.
No, I'd say that's...
Who put Cartman in stone?
Yeah.
And can we help him?
Yeah. And is that legal?
Yeah, leave Cartman in stone. He
but
sucks.
Also, I can't watch South Park anymore because Matt Stone and Trey Parker, they gave Josh Gad his big break in the Book of Mormon.
They
so
did.
I actually don't fuck with Cartman anymore
oh
because
my
it's
God.
A little bit too close to Josh Gad being a relevant person.
Yeah.
So sorry.
And he could play him in the live action movie one day.
You were given a list.
Anyway, where was I? I'll start from the beginning. Number 7 again. Let It Go. Love Is an Open Door. Build a Snowman. Fixer Upper. Okay. For third worst. I'm a Snowman. Heat Won't Kill Me. Number 2. Getting Ready for the Party is the 2nd worst. Number 1. Ice Guys Making Ice is the worst song in the movie.
Ice Guys Making Ice is a terrible song.
And no, and it's the only song no women appear in.
Oh, sure.
Well, we don't know how the ice
identifies. On purpose.
That's true. Well,
yeah. All right.
So what? Three nipples, and I give all three to whatever interesting character will be revealed in the second Frozen that's coming out November 24th, 2019.
The three nippled character we haven't met yet.
There's got to be something. Mm-hmm. Something either creepy, scary,
or
bad,
hot.
Or hot. The four tenets of a movie.
Yeah, that's like the National Honor Society. Are you creepy? Are you, what were the four?
Creepy, scary, bad, or hot.
Those are the four things you have to be to get into National Honor Society.
Well, I'm back to being mad. Okay, Chris, thank you so much for
being here.
Thank
you so much for having me.
We had so much fun talking about Frozen. Where can people find you online, follow you?
What
would you like to plug?
Go to hotguywithglasses.com is my website, or chrisfarren.com. Both will send you to the same place.
Great.
And on Twitter, Chris Farren. Instagram, Chris Farren. Facebook, Chris Farren.
Also, check out Chris's music.
Yes. Oh, I'm a musician.
Yes. Well, thanks again so much for being here. You can follow the Bechdelcast on social media at Bechdelcast. You can give us gifts the way that Chris Farren's fans gave him. You only have one fan.
Rest in peace.
They just died in a boating accident, but it was a beautiful boating accident.
Yeah, the way your fans have given you Frozen gifts. One of those gifts can be $5 a month to our Matreon, because that'll get you two bonus episodes. Anyway, right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.